it has to do with my own personal life, he says, but it has also to do with God's eternal purpose, his eternal mystery, the mystery that he didn't make known in the past as well and as clearly as he's made it known now. And so let's just think a minute about what Paul says here about himself. He said, God personally intervened to make this message clear to me. And he did so to show his grace to me. So what was Paul doing when Jesus appeared to him and called him to this new task? Well, he was persecuting the Christians. He was failing in his understanding of the spiritual battle that was going on. And so he was stuck with a mind that said, well, Israel is God's chosen people. God called them, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and then through the kingdom, the time of the kings, of David that we were just reading about, to a nation that was his own nation. And he gave them a law, and he gave them instructions on how to build the temple. And he said, I'm going to live in Jerusalem, in this temple. And this idea that God's people were only the Jewish people. And then there's this group of people who said, yes, and God had promised the Messiah, and Jesus was the Messiah. And Paul said, no, that's a mistake. And so these people who are following Christ and claiming that he is the Messiah are not staying true to the Old Testament teachings. And so he tried to first imprison the people that were following Christ and later to vote for them being put to death. He is engaged in this spiritual struggle, but he is not seeing what God really wants. And so Jesus calls him. Now, it talks about he was traveling on the road, and all of a sudden he sees a bright light, and he hears a voice, and the voice says, go into the city, and you'll be told what to do. And so how he came to see the light, well, perhaps it was the interaction with these Christians he was opposing, that he saw something in their lives that and gained a better understanding of what God really was calling mankind to be. But he then receives the message from the brother in Damascus, and he's baptized, and then from then on he starts trying to share the message of Christ, and he takes on a special task. He says, well, I'm not going to try to share this with people with a Jewish background, but I'm going to go to the Gentiles. And he says the mystery that was only hinted at, wasn't very clear in the Old Testament, now becomes clear. Now we see a few passages in the Old Testament where it's clear that God also was interested in the other nations. It wasn't as clear until the times of Jesus. And so here he says, the mystery that God hadn't made as clear in the Old Testament as he does now is that through the gospel, the Gentiles are also heirs with Israel. Everyone, all nations, can be God's descendants. And that message is based on the message of grace. He says, we experience this. I experienced this because even though I was doing exactly the wrong thing, God called me, revealed himself to me, gave me a new job, a new challenge, not because I deserved it, but because he's gracious to forgive. And the message that we have to give to everyone is one of grace. It's the message that that I preach. Although I'm the least of all of God's people, this grace was given to me to preach to the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ. He said, I experienced God's grace, and that's the message we have to give to everyone. Now, this leads us then to what we read earlier about King David. So King David was someone who messed up. And as we read through that passage, I want us to take note of what the prophet said of the dire consequences of what he had done. I closed my Bible, and so I've got to find it again. Here we go, in chapter 12. The prophet says, he tells a story. And David says, well, anyone who acts like this deserves to be put to death. So what a person deserves is that acts in that way is death. And then he says, but for sure he needs to pay the penalty. So even if we don't give him what he deserves, he should pay a penalty. So I guess you could say even David, as a king, has some understanding of, you don't always get what you deserve. But you do experience the penalty of it. Nathan says, well, because of your sinful behavior, all kinds of terrible things are going to happen in your family. There's going to be internal strife, division. There's going to be, you might say, civil war. There's going to be infidelity. He says, you know, you had someone killed, an innocent man killed. Death is going to continually be present in your family now. Once people see the misbehavior of the king, other people say, well, if he can get away with it, we're going to do it too. And so his life and the life of his family is dumped into deep misery and continual strife and struggle. Sometimes, I don't know if you ever watch the news in the United States now, but there's a saying that some of the newscasters like to use. It says, elections have consequences. So when you vote and elect people, that has consequences. If you vote people who aren't very upright into office, then you have to struggle with how they rule and how they govern. Here we can say sin has consequences. Sin can make our lives miserable. And it is... that's the message that David has to hear from Nathan. And of course, that's not a happy message. David then says, and takes us to our message about attitude that John just mentioned. David says, I have sinned against the Lord. So he admits that he is has done terrible things. Now, Nathaniel doesn't say, well, okay, then God will take away all the consequences of the evil you've done. The consequences don't get taken away. What Nathaniel does say is, the Lord has taken away your sin. You're not going to die. You deserve to die. You deserve that punishment that you yourself pronounced. But God's not going to do that. He's going to forgive you. Just like Paul said, well, I'm the least of all the followers of God. Since I was instrumental in killing Christians, maybe he would say, well, I deserve to have been killed by God as well. But he didn't. He received grace. David receives grace. It's not only in the New Testament that God forgives. Now, I think there's an important lesson here for us to take into account. And that is that even if our relationship can be restored to God through grace, we need to be very careful with sinful behavior. We need to be all the more diligent to fight that spiritual fight. So when Paul says we're engaged in a spiritual battle against the devil who is trying to destroy us, we should not think, oh, well, God will forgive us anyway. It doesn't really matter how strongly I fight. Sinful behavior will destroy our lives, even if God forgives us and that relationship with God can be restored. And so, if we think of this, we can think of another phrase that is used in the Christian world today, and that is the idea of cheap grace. So, going back to Martin Luther, who said, everything is grace. We have faith in God's grace. A religious tradition came up that said, well, if everything is grace, kind of like Paul says in Romans, well, if grace is a good thing, then we should sin a lot so that God can give us lots of grace. And so that's the idea of cheap grace. Oh, it doesn't really matter how terrible we live, because God's going to forgive us anyway. It's you don't think of grace as valuable, but you think of it as cheap. Oh, just do anything, because God's going to forgive you and love you anyway. And so Paul says, God forbid. That's a mistaken idea. We have died to sin. We're engaged in this spiritual battle. The symbol of baptism is that we're buried. The old person dies in the watery grave. We stand up to live a new life. And that new life, that's the challenge we're talking about here. How do we gain that spiritual reality? Well, so the first thing is the spiritual reality is grace. And that's one of those spiritual things, isn't it? I mean, you can't go to the store and say, I want to buy some grace. It's a spiritual reality. Last week we were talking about forgiveness. Well, this ties in with forgiveness. Grace is being given something you don't deserve. And we said, if you harm someone, if you mistreat someone, then forgiveness is a gift. You can't buy forgiveness. You can't make someone forgive you. They give it to you as a gift, and when they do so, it's grace. And so, in our spiritual struggle, we need to be looking at those places where we can practice grace, where we can practice forgiveness. So we need to be on the lookout. Where's the place where we feel a calling or an encouragement from the devil to seek revenge? And we can hear God's Spirit say, forgive. Where one person says, I'm going to be angry and seek justice. And another calling who says, I'm going to restore the relationship. I'm going to let this person know that they're more important than the damage I've suffered by forgiving them. That is the spiritual struggle. And so, the story of grace and the story of forgiveness connected with the story of how sin can have terrible consequences. We see it with David. If you read the rest of the history, how many people wind up dying and how the family is poisoned, and eventually the whole kingdom of God is divided into two parts. In the life of Paul, we of course know that he has a life of struggle, but there's one specific thing that is kind of vague. You know, he talks about mystery, but there's a mystery in the life of Paul. That is when he talks about this idea of a thorn in the flesh. And so often the question comes up, well, what is this thorn in the flesh? And one idea that some people bring up is the idea that he continually has the burden of the Christians that he had helped kill. So as he encounters Christians, he may encounter family members of people that he caused to be killed. And there's nothing he can do to fix that. You know, he can't say, well, you know, your parents died as Christians because I was persecuting Christians, and I'll bring them back. It was my fault. You shouldn't suffer because of what I did. Some people think that was the thorn in the flesh, that it was this struggle of the fact that my sins have caused enormous pain to other people, and there's nothing I can do to fix it. And the response when Paul asks God to fix it, to take it away, is he says, grace has to be enough. You have to accept my forgiveness, but the pain is still there. The results are still there. And so perhaps that's it. Other people think, well, he was going blind and he wanted God to make him be able to see better again. All kinds of theories about that. But the idea that if this first idea is true, even though we have a message of grace, even though our relationship with God is restored, the pain and the suffering as the result of our sins continues on. And that's why it's so important for us to be involved in this spiritual struggle. That's why we want to say, I want to do the right thing rather than the wrong thing. And if we take that battle to heart, we will better perform as God's people. We'll better represent Christ here on earth. We'll better be able to let our light shine. We'll be less of a hindrance to people who say, oh, look at all those believers. It's just all hypocrisy. It's not real. It's not true. We want it to be true in our lives.